Hello and welcome to another episode of Agility on the Ear. Today we have the great opportunity to hear the agility life story of an international agility star from Croatia, as today's episode will be in English. He first came in touch with agility in 1992 with his first mixed breed dog, Aster, and since then agility has become an integral part of his life. After achieving rather good results without the possibility of competing at the European Championships, those were the only available championships at the time, he decided to get a dog with a pedigree, and it was a Belgian Shepherd Malinois named Mel Offanelli. With Mel, he first competed at the European Championships 1995 in Torino, Italy. And since then, he's a member of Croatian national agility team. Mel's last world championship was back in 2004, and the following year, he became team leader of the Croatian national agility team. In 2006, he qualified with 2.5-year-old Border Collie Mal Schneck, with unfortunately only competed once at the world championships since he suffered from epilepsy and died shortly afterwards. The year 2010 has been the most successful year in his agility career. With Churcha, he won second place at the World Championships for Belgian Shepherds at the FMBB, third place with Tip at European Open Championship, and seventh place at the World Championship. All of his dogs, except his mixed breed, have been part of the Croatian team at the European Championships, World Championships, and European Open. In addition to competing in agility, he also holds seminars and judges international agility competitions. Now he's completely devoted to agility competitions and seminars as well as judging. I'm looking forward to hear much more of this all and say, welcome, Zeljko Gora.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for spending time with us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
So let's start differently today. Tell us something about yourself, which dogs you are currently active with. And towards the end, we will hear more about you and how you got into dog and agility.
So I think you already said a lot of things about me. I don't need some special introduction. Today, these days, I'm competing with Hush, my 5-year-old Border Collie. And I started to last weekend. It was the first competition with my young Border Collie, Smoke. He's Hush son. So let's say now I have two dogs that I'm active and started to compete. And I have a Tip that you mentioned. He's now 13. And I have Ganja Malino. She's 11. So both of them are retired now. So four dogs, and I think that's more than enough.
I think so too. Quite something to do. So do you make living from agility?
Yeah, I started to live from agility back in 10 or 15 years, I don't know exactly. Wow. And for sure last 10 years I am just teaching and just living from it. A lot of traveling, a lot of seminars, sometimes judging, not that much, 3-4 competitions per year, because I enjoy more to train my dogs, compete, teach, and then to judge. And I think too many judging, too many seminars, I think I would just get a little bit too empty out of inspiration and everything. I just don't want agility to become too much pressure or to just make me empty, because it's still my hobby and I really like it, even if it's still my job and everything. But I just wanted to have a job that I will enjoy doing it 24 hours per day and everything. I just don't want it to be, you know, too much. Then I think I will quit and start to do something else.
Like fishing or something.
We will see. I hope I will never get enough of agility, because for now that's the only thing still I want to do. Nothing else.
And do you have some fixed training groups or?
In Croatia it's quite hard, because it's not that many people in Croatia doing agility. So I am traveling a lot. So it's quite difficult to fix some fixed training groups, because I can't obligate to the people that I will be home every Wednesday or every Friday or Tuesday, because sometimes, for example, now end of the month, I will go to England and then I will stay there for 3 weeks and then I would need to cancel some training and everything. So when I'm in Croatia, people know that I'm home and then we book some training and everything, but not regularly something that is happening once per week or something like that.
So do you have your own club or some training
field? I have my own training field and quite happy to say that I have a natural grass, sand field, and now also artificial grass, which wow. I hope soon it will be covered. It will not be any building, but some kind of a roof or a tent or something like that, so that I'm not depending about the rain, snow, sun, or something like that. So whenever I want to go to train or people want to book training, that I don't have to think about the weather, which still it's working like that. So yeah, I have my field, which is like 5 minutes from 5 minutes drive from my place. So which is really cool. Or I just go there and walk to warm up the dogs before and cool them down on the way back home in the middle of the fields, so no problem with the dogs barking, a lot of nature where you can warm up and walk the dogs before or after training, so it's quite cool.
Sounds nice and like a nice place to have. Yeah. How do your trainings look like?
You mean with my dogs?
Yes, with your dogs.
Yeah. My training depends. If I just want to train contacts, for example, dog walk, sometimes I can just go to the field and do maybe dog walk 10 times, maybe do some turns. Or, for example, now when I just started to compete with Smoke, just to improve, let's say, seesaw. So sometimes I just go there and I will just train seesaw 5-10 times. And sometimes that's my training. Sometimes I will build up the course. And mostly I'm running some short sequences because I'm quite detailed person, so I can't run 22 obstacles if I see the dog drop the bar or the turn was a little bit wider or the running dog walk was not deep how I would like. So it's most of the time just doing some short things to improve. And sometimes if I go to the big competition, then definitely I will try to run some courses just to me and the dogs are mentally and physically be able to run more than 10 or 10, yeah. 12, 15 obstacles.
Yeah, like later you need us also for competition. So
yeah, definitely.
So what is there the most important for you in the training? You just put the focus there for technique or also for some endurance or some more physical training?
It depends. The thing when I plan training, and I'm planning training when I have young dogs. When they are a little bit older, I just go to the field and then I build up some course and then I do some things. But just try to improve the things that I know that are my weaknesses. So just to have some good training, to have some good plan what I will do. If that doesn't work, usually I just like to stop, go for a walk, because I don't want to put dogs and myself in some frustrated situation if something is not working. So yeah, I just get ready for the training, and if it doesn't work like I expected, then usually I will just
really stop. Then you take your dogs and go for a walk?
Sorry?
Then you really take your dogs there out and go
for
a walk?
I will just stop training, take a short break, or I will just say, okay, today I'm not in the mood. I just don't want to get, you know, frustrated or go over the top with something, and I will just make a break. I will come tomorrow or in 2 days or 3 days. It depends. Most of the time, it's always when I go for training, happy or something, but sometimes you have things in a private life that they are somewhere behind. And maybe if the training doesn't go like you expected, all the things will go out. And then I say, okay, now it's enough. Let's go home. Let's go for a walk or just do things like that. I just want to keep it all the time, you know, as a lot of fun.
Interesting. And you say something like you start to make plans with a young dog already. Can you tell us there more?
No, I mean, I meant about the Smoke, who is now 19 months. Then yeah. I have for sure better plan what things I need to do when you have a dog, for example, like Hush, who is 5 years old. So most of the things are quite good. Of course, you always need to improve some skills. But when I have young dog before he will start to compete and everything, then my planning of training is definitely much, much better than when you have already more experienced dogs.
Yeah, I understand.
And the problem is that most of the time I'm training alone. And then, you know, you always set up some kind of your courses. And then sometimes I push myself to take the courses from internet, from some other judges or trainers, just to be able to run all type of different things.
Okay. So can you just give us an insight when you start with a young dog, how you start them? What is the first things you teach them?
Poof. When I get a puppy, most of the time I'm not focused on agility, because even if I live from agility, I really want all my dogs to function perfectly in daily life. Since I'm traveling a lot, I want them to be able to hang out with other people, without other dogs, walking them without the leash, doesn't matter if it's city, forest, fields, or something like that. So definitely I start a lot with building a good relationship with my dogs, a lot of motivation, because I'm type of person who likes more to work with a toy than a food, which always when you start to do some things, definitely it's easier to start with a food. Dogs are less excited and it's easier to teach them. But a lot of building, a lot of relationship, a lot of motivation, because I really want them to push from the beginning to be really motivated with the toys. For example, when I got Smoke, he was 4 or 5 months, because he came from UK and it was COVID and I couldn't travel and everything. So he was really super excited when he came to run with other dogs. Only thing he had in his head was chasing the other dogs.
Okay.
And I didn't want to walk him all the time separately, because when I go, I like really a lot to go for walks every day, 1-2 hours, depends. If I'm not training, I will take a longer walk to the forest. So for me, it was really the first thing, okay, let's work on his recalls, that he's able to go for a walk with my older dogs. He can run with them, but every time when I call him, that he's able to come back. So I think I worked on that for at least a month. And then when he was able to focus around other dogs, which are running around, and just be focused on me, then we started to do some pre-foundation things like spin left, right, go around the cone, go through the wings, or some easy things, which I usually do with the really, really young dogs.
Okay, so also you make some physical and coordination training with the younger.
Definitely, but I think I don't do it much as I should, because most of the time when I go for a walk in the forest, always you have some branches or things around. Yeah. So I also think that's really good coordination for the dogs, and especially it's closer to agility just doing some stationary things in the living room and everything. So it's kind of combination. Definitely I'm lazy person when we talk about teaching the dogs a lot of tricks or doing a lot of exercises in the house. Even if it's raining or snowing, I just rather go for walk and
outside.
And I will notice, because Smoke was, when he was young, he was growing really fast. He has really, really long legs. And he was my first dog who was really uncoordinated in the period when he was 6-7 months. So definitely I put some effort in those things to get him to be a little bit more balanced. But more he was running with the older dogs, changing some directions in the fields and everything, build up more muscles. Definitely his coordination became better and better.
All right. So you had also like Malinois and border collars. Can you maybe say what's the difference between the training methods compared between them?
So definitely Malinois is my favorite breed because I like crazy, wild and stable dogs. And I still have Ganja. She's 11. She doesn't compete anymore. To be honest, I didn't change many things in training comparing to training her or training my Border Collies. Only thing what I comparing to Border Collies with, I try to improve with her because she's really long. Her acceleration was not the best, for example, let's say after the turns. So I was working quite a lot on that. I think I took, she improved a lot, but she's just that type of dog that needed like 7 meter distances between the obstacles to develop the speed. But training the turns or even running dog walk, it was quite similar. Definitely now when I trained with the Smoke running contacts, definitely I put much more effort in training the target as a flat work on the ground that I did with Ganja, and Ganja was quite easy, much easier than my Border Collies when I trained the running dog walk. Only thing,
really?
Problems with up contacts. Yeah, but it's just depends about the breed. So I never put any effort in training her up contacts, but her down contacts on the dog walk were, it was much easier. I didn't need to train it as much as with my Border Collies. But also when she competed, I think courses change quite a lot in that period, a lot of turns after the dog walk or discrimination and everything. So probably also that's the reason why I need to put much more effort in training Hush and Smoke running dog walk than it was with Ganja.
Yeah, absolutely agree to this. Do you have some rituals before you went to some start position?
Now when I'm older, definitely I have more, because before when I was younger, I would just go to the start. I think I was not mentally prepared enough because it was only, okay, let's run, let's try to win. But definitely now I have some rituals. What I noticed when I come for some smaller competition, if I don't like the course, thing is that I need to slap my face a little bit, because if I'm not into the course, if the course is not challenging for me or it's not a lot of running and everything, then it's not my type of course. But I always say, if you want to be a good handler, you need to be able to run all type of, yes, of horses. So the ritual, if I'm not motivated on the start, if I don't like the course, definitely I will slap myself a little bit. If I really want and I enjoy the course, somehow a lot of repetitions, how I will handle some things, thinking about my position, my body language, when I will say my verbal cues and everything. So yeah, more and more older I am, it looks like I'm also mentally more mature to get myself ready for the start.
So in your opinion, is it more, it needs longer time to get mental ready, or do you think you can also train it like in a shorter time?
I think that definitely depends about person to person. So I would not put that in general. I don't have too many preparations, but definitely I started to, for example, to repeat the courses much more times in my head, thinking about my position of my feet, my verbal cues and everything, just when I'm there, that I will not be surprised in some situation in the course that I'm not mentally ready for that part, and will be a little bit more serious when I go to the start. I will maybe not talk with the people until I need to take the leash off from the dog. I will just move on the side and focus together with the dog, and yeah, just try to be a little bit more into the course than I was, let's say, five years ago. And especially if we talk about some big events.
Yeah. And do you have some rituals with your dog before?
Yeah, definitely. First, we go for a walk, warm up, a lot of playing and everything. I usually move on the start because, for example, Hush is really excited, especially if we compete in an indoor place. a lot of dogs barking, then his excitement goes over the top. So sometimes I will move somewhere a little bit on the side that he cannot watch directly the dogs running. Little cuddle, maybe food. If I see that he's over the top, then I will just take the toy away and then I will do a little bit more preparation with the food that he will be a little bit calmer.
Okay. What is it about this sport that fascinates you so much?
I think since I'm in agility for already 30 years, and always when I say 30 years, I feel somehow so old after that, because I started really when I was 12. Just to see how many things improved since 1992 when I started to agility until now. Definitely type of courses that are now I like much, much more than it was before, because for me, point of agility is really to run a lot, to test the handlers and the dog skills in the course. So, and constantly improving and having a lot of homework when you come home from a big competition and see some new ideas, some new situations that judges are putting, that just everything all together fascinate me, and seeing how dogs are getting more speed and more skills and how agility is growing in general. So many good handlers and good dogs nowadays. So when you come at the world championship, it's, I don't know, you have so many dogs that can be on the podium. And before, you know, it was not like that. You had maybe 5 or 10 dogs or handlers which were really good on the top, and you would always expect from that people to be on the top. But nowadays it's much harder, and it's much more interesting to watch some finals, because you can't say this person will win, because it's always somebody new coming, new dogs, young dogs. So it's all together. I'm in love in that sport, and still that I have feeling that love is still 30 years together from the first day until today when we are talking about it.
And it, good relationship, or?
Yeah, my longest relationship ever, so for 30 years now. So, yes. And like I said, it's still my hobby, and it gives me so much freedom how to plan my calendar. I think today, never say never, but I think I would never be able to sit in the office for 8 hours, or every day go to the same place, same rituals and everything. I mean, I'm traveling a lot, and sometimes it can be really exhausting to be in the car or in the plane and then teach. But it's just a lot of freedom. You can plan your calendar however you want. Most of the time you are out in the nature. You are doing what you like. You meet so many new people, new countries. I would never travel that much in my life and see so many different countries and continents if I would not be involved in.
Absolutely true. So we talked already before a short time that you started in 1992.
Yes.
What has changed or also developed the most in this time? Maybe you can take us to some course in 1992.
First,
if you remember.
First thing what is on my mind, that World Championship, we were running just on a carpet, which was super slippery for the dogs.
Wow.
We had wooden contacts, metal jumps. And to be honest, in that period, I was never thinking about warming up or cooling down. When I went to the World Championship, I had my Malino Melo Fanelli that you mentioned before. My warm-up routine was just to throw the ball to make him tired before we go to the start, because I was then 14 years old. He was a male Malino, really crazy, wild and everything. And that was my warm-up routine, but not because I was thinking about warm-up, just to, you know, spend a little bit more energy before he will come to the start. And nowadays, when I'm thinking about my dogs, that we didn't do any treatments with them, no massages, no osteopathy, no chiropractor, everything, I feel so sorry for them. But it was just how things were before. And nowadays you are thinking about at least me and a lot of people about warm up, cooling down, about safety. Like if I had recently, I never did it before, but recently I had two competitions that I didn't really want to run the courses because I found the approaches to the contacts really dangerous. I talked to the judges, one judge definitely changed it, and then I was running the course, another one didn't want to go in any discussions. I just packed my things from the competition and I left. And before, wow, definitely it would not be like that. Yeah. Because definitely before we didn't think about, this is a dangerous approach to the dog walk. And especially because in 1992, dogs didn't have any running dog walk. Or, yes. Christine Charpentier, the handler from France that she won a world championship, she had kind of a running dog walk. But most of us were doing just not even two on two of you would just scream and you would be lucky if the dog would be on the contact. So we didn't think about things like that. We didn't think about the turns and everything. My Malinois that I was running in that period world championship, his turns were super wide. I never thought about teaching the turns, but he was always fast enough. So if he would be clear, he would always be somewhere on the top. So definitely equipment, artificial grass improved, and also the way of training. Because today, if you have a little bit wider turn or the dog will slip on artificial grass, you don't have that many chances to be on the podium anymore. Yeah. And before it was just, if you have a fast dog and you will be clear, probably you will win.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. And in this short time, you can go year by year and things are changing and developing. It's so interesting. And the dogs get so fast and they get so much more technical training. That's really interesting. So let's go into 2010, your most successful year.
Yep. So that was the year that I was second, me and Georgia, on the world championship for Belgian Shepherds. Georgia was a Malinois, but she was a show type of Malinois, which in that time I didn't know that the difference in physical build and character, it's such a big difference than if you take a working Malinois. Because my first working Malinois was really crazy. I met him when he was 8 or 9 months. I was like 14 years, and when I was tugging with him, he was playing with a toy. Then he released the toy, he bit my knee, and then I said, okay, definitely that dog is mine. And he would just run with a head through the wall. He didn't care about anything. And then I got Georgia, who was really sensitive. She was more interested in the food than in the toys. And I really struggled in the beginning with her. She was just not my type of dog. But then all the things and approaches to her and training, I totally changed from scratches. And I said, okay, it's much easier for me to develop my way of training to the dog than to ask from the dog to develop to me. And for me, that was really a big success to be with her on the podium, because physically she was not the dog who was built for a lot of speed and everything. She was quite stiff in the front part of the body. So definitely that was really great success for me. And then it was a European Open in Liberec, where I was running with Tip. And he was really 20 or 22 months old, and he ended up third on the European Open. And I never expected things like that. He was a really fast dog when he was young, but at that age, I would never expect that he would have really good results, because especially Liberec was well known as a lot of mud, a lot of rain for 3 days. And in each course, because he just started to compete before European Open, he had a lot of bars, a lot of mistakes, disqualifications, and he went in the final as a best of country. Today, wow, there is no best of country. And that was the only clear course that we had on European Open. And luckily that was in the final.
Amazing,
and then
really,
getting a seventh place on the world championship. So that year was successful.
And he was quite young.
Not that experienced.
Like,
I think he was around two when he was running the world championship when he took the seventh place. Yeah.
Crazy. Let's stick with the Malinois for a while. You started at FMBB. Take us with you from the departure at home to standing at the award ceremony as FIS world champion.
Oh my, that was 11 years ago. I don't remember that many things. I remember then my really good friend Daniel and I, we were the only one going from Croatia. We traveled together, spent a really good time there. Didn't expect much, both of us. He was quite new in agility. You're asking me quite a quite hard question.
Like brain training.
11 years ago. Yeah, I just remember that something with the results didn't work enough. So until the closing ceremony, we still didn't know who was first, second, or third. So we hoped that I was like second or third, but still something that worked with results. It was just, you know, until the last second, and they didn't call my name. We didn't know if I'm on the podium or not. So
you had there no list where you can check
the
time?
No, that year I remember, no, we didn't have any list. We counted by hands the results. I don't know if it was something wrong with the software or something like that, but until the last moment, until closing ceremony, we were not 100% sure if George and I were second, third, or maybe fourth, something like that.
Crazy.
And
how was then the feeling to stand there? Did you realize it immediately?
No, as I remember, I was just happy, and like I said, I felt a lot of success with that type of dog to achieve such good results. Not like something too much emotionally or something like that. It was just like a lot of happiness.
Yeah, and you trained this dog, a lot of training sessions, a lot of mental thoughts about it. So I think
not a lot of training, because she needed the short training just to keep her motivation high all the time. So we didn't go through too many training, because she would just probably get empty and things like that. So it was all the time keeping her motivated. And if I compare her with the dogs that I'm running now, I would always let her to watch other dogs and bark at other dogs, because that would bring her in some better mood and she would be much more motivated. And comparing to the dogs now, if I would let them to watch other dogs, I think they would just go over the top and they would just be too wild on the course.
Do you remember the curse from the FMBB, or one curse of it?
I think I have, when you ask me now, I think I have some parts of the courses in my head, because I made the videos when we came from FMBB, so some parts of the course I have, and especially the final run, which was for that period quite upper course with a lot of turns and technique, and she was quite small, so that type of course really suit her, comparing to some dogs which were much faster than she was, but some technical parts were maybe too much, wider turns, maybe some drop bars or things like that. So I think that course in the final, because I remember jumping was really easy and open, and I think she took like 13th place or something that in the jumping, and then agility was much, much harder and needed more skills from the handlers and the dog. And I think that harder course, agility course, helped us definitely to be on the podium.
Nice and interesting. So how is this event, like the FMBB, compared to World Championship of all dog breeds?
Definitely World Championship is much difficult, because you have so many good dogs, and especially Border Collies. And that's one of the reasons why now I don't have a Malinois that I'm competing in agility, because I don't want to have too many dogs. I also thought I will never have four dogs in the same time. even if I am just living from the dogs, I have a lot of time with the dog, but sometimes traveling with four dogs can be a little bit difficult, especially if I go with a plane. I don't want to leave my dogs at home. That's why most of the seminars that I'm doing in Europe, I'm driving. And then the World Championship for Belgian Shepherds, it's really cool to see because it's so many Belgian Shepherds on the same place. So you can see some really really good dogs that that you like. But it's also so hard to get a good, especially Malinois, who can compete and be in the top, competing against the Border Collie. So to be honest, I'm a little bit afraid if I will take a new one. Would it be physically good enough to compete against all the Border Collies? And now I have new young Border Collies, so definitely there is no space for a new dog, but that doesn't mean that one day I will not get a new Malinois again. So, and now I didn't go for FMBB for so many years because Ganja is retired, but definitely also when I see some videos from there, you have so many dogs who can easily win World Championship, but it's not that often like with the Border Collies.
Yeah,
so definitely sure. With the Border Collies, you have a bigger range that you can choose a puppy that you would expect it would be good agility. Of course, when I take a puppy, you never know how he will grow up physically and would he be able to do this or that. You don't go with that. I always, when I choose a puppy, I just go for the character. I like the puppy, which is really open, likes to tug, open to the dogs, people, and everything. I will go for that. I will not watch physical abilities of the dog, especially when they are 8 weeks. I'm not that, I'm missing the word, let's say, well-educated, that I will recognize, okay, puppy is 8 weeks and his body structure is perfect, that he will be so good in agility one day.
Okay, but what was the reason to change the breed from Malinois then to Border Collie?
Since my first dog was a mixed dog and I couldn't go to the, then it was European Open, it was not World Championship back in that time, then I took that Malinois, which was 8 months old, and I just fell in love. And then, how it started with, and then I think I went to Alan, who is a breeder of Tip, and then I saw I think he had two litters in the same time, and then I just saw the puppy, and he was smooth. And then in Croatia and generally in the world, it was not that many smooth Border Collies. And then I just fell in love in his character and everything, because I always wanted a Kelpie, but working Kelpie, and then they were not recognized from FCI because they would come from Australia, no papers, because Kelpie was something for me always between Border Collie and Malinois, something in between. And then I couldn't get a Kelpie to have FCI papers, and then I just started with a Border Collie. And then I think Tip was a perfect dog to fell in love in a Border Collies. And now I'm just stuck with them. And I would not, for now, I would definitely not change, because I'm really in love in Hush. He's a perfect dog. And now I have his son Smoke, who is really super cool dog. So it just, for now, I have everything what I need, and I'm now not thinking about changing anything. Maybe one day I will again see some really cool Malinois, and then maybe I will ask about the puppies or things like that. I'm also the person who doesn't investigate a lot about the lines.
Yeah.
You know, I just want the lines to be healthy and everything, but I will never study for 5-6 months or 1 year from which line I want a dog. And definitely what I want to do, because now if dogs are coming from a good lines, that you need to be fifth or sixth on the list.
Yeah,
definitely I will not come there and then, oh, I like this puppy, no, that one is taken, you need to take this one, because I just want, when I see the puppy, to feel some, you know, click, even if it's coming from the best parents in the world still. If
so, it's more like a hard decision for you to choose a puppy.
Definitely. And that was how it went with Hush, because my really good friend Mirja, she bred him, and we know each other also for 30 years. And she just told me, okay, I have a litter. You can come. You can see the puppies. If you will like the puppy, you can take. If you don't like any of them, you don't have to take it. No hard feelings and everything. And for me, that was perfect. I was going there and I saw the puppies 4 or 5 times because she lives in Ljubljana. It's 1.5 hours away from me. And then I just like Hush since I saw him for the first time. And for me, that was super easy decision to say, okay, this dog really suits me.
Yeah. Maybe some critical questions, but I want to ask you, has the success changed you?
No. I think even if I would have bigger success nowadays, it would not. For me, I always say, for me, winning big events definitely means a lot. But that's, for me, not the most important things. And I think success or no success, if you really enjoy what you do and what you work, that things will never change you. And agility is just one small thing in the world and some small sport when you compare to some other things. Yeah. And why the hell that would change me? I mean,
well, there are some people
winning the world championship or not winning or things like that. I think you would just, if you are normal person and down to the ground, definitely success, big or smaller success, will never change you. People will know you more. That's definitely, if you sure. will win, people will ask you more for seminars and things like that. That's one thing. But to change approach to agility or to dogs or to people, never. I mean, never say never, but until now it's just how it is. For me, I always, when I go to compete, it's to win or lose. And until now, I never won World Championship or European Open. I didn't win. And I would really like to do it, but it's not priority that I'm just training and working for that.
Okay, so even when you're at some bigger competitions and you are not placed or something, it's not that you are so much, of course, I think you are disappointed, but it's not a frustration that you say, okay.
No, definitely not. It always, oh, it could be better, but maybe next year it will be. I mean, an agility is you and the dog. You can just have one bar, dog can just sleep on artificial grass, drop the bar, and then you will lose the podium on things like that, because it's so many things. You need to have a lot of luck, and the course needs to fit you and the dog and everything. It's so many things in the same time that needs to happen. So of course I'm not the happiest, but I will definitely not be disappointed.
Okay. 2006 was also a tough year for you because you were losing your young border collie. Yeah. Would you like to tell us there something about it?
Yeah, that was one of the worst experiences that I had in my life, especially with the dogs, because all that litter, I think it was 7 puppies, I think 4 of them had epilepsy. And Neck, I call him Mac, he started with epilepsy. I think he was around quite late, 1 year or maybe even later. So I thought maybe it will happen once and everything. I was totally in shock. And then he would have seizures every 6 or 4 months. Not too often, but that seizures would be quite long and quite hard. And he would recover really fast and everything, but then everything started to happen more often and everything. And that was something that nobody wants to go through it. First, because of the dog, and another thing because of the owner, because it's so hard to look at the dog. You can't help him that much, so much pain, and when the dog is done with a seizure, totally lost and everything. So, and that's nowadays when somebody asks me to use Hush as a stud dog and everything, for me the most important thing that there is no epilepsy in the line or OCD, which is really hard in the border collie lines, because you have also a lot of people who are hiding that, which I don't see any any use of it, because once when you had a dog with epilepsy, you definitely don't want any puppy or any dog to go through it. So for me, just like if I notice any epilepsy in the female's line and everything, it's just a big no to the people who asked for mating. And definitely with the breeding, good border collies for now, when we are talking about agility, hiding epilepsy or OCD in the line, definitely nothing will change and nothing will improve. We will just have more and more sick dogs like Mac was. And yeah, that's not something that you want to have in your life.
And he died then because of this?
No, I just needed to put him to sleep, because when he started to have really bad seizure and started to scream during the seizure and going into that status epilepticus, which is lasting for hours and hours and spending the hours at the vet's place. And then I didn't leave from agility. I had a normal job, so I was not home for 8 or 9 hours. You can't leave the dog alone at home because you never know when the seizure will happen. And then I was living in an apartment. And then when he would stop with the seizure, he just had a need to walk around and he would crash in all the furniture and everything. And then when that seizure really became hard, when I went to the vet, in that moment, I made a decision, okay, now it's enough. The vet said we can try with some other medicine, but I don't guarantee you that it will be more successful than the medicine he's taking now. And when I was thinking about that, I said, like, if I don't put him to sleep now and we try to with another medicine, I don't think after 1 week or 1 month or 2 months, I would be able to put him to sleep. And I think my and his life will be total disaster. And in that moment, when I came there and when I made the decision, I said, I will do it now or never. So I think even if it was really hard decision, and maybe I had like 5% chances to try with a new medicine, I just didn't know how that will end up. And I think in that moment, I made the best decision for him and also for me.
Horrible, yeah.
But I mean, it's never an easy decision that you need to put your dog to sleep. Oh. I always thought, especially with Malino that I had before, I hope he will just run when he's old and then he will just, you know, something will happen. But all the dogs until now that I had, I just need to put them to sleep. Because Georgia, she died, she had a cancer and everything, and things became so, so bad that she was really in such a bad condition, we couldn't do anything. So I also need to put her to sleep. But that's when you have a dog, they live much shorter than we are. And that's something you don't think in front. But when they become older, that's something that you need to decide for them.
Yeah, not a nice part, but it's also part of life.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was a genetic problem with neck?
I don't know. I think not that something you should ask the breeder or something, because most of the people said that it was too big percent of the puppies that it would be genetic. Maybe because the female get to a C-section, maybe she gets too much anesthetic or something. So maybe that also affected to the dogs and everything. So I don't know. I can't say yes or no, that the breeder should probably know more or something like that. So it's just, I don't know, not the best thing what happened, but was it genetic or not genetic? I can't.
Doesn't matter in the end, because the dog has it and the emotions. Okay. So let's talk about something nice again. Take us with you to your seminars. How are you as a trainer?
Oh, I think that's something you should ask people who are coming for my seminars, how I am as a trainer. For me, what is really important when I have a seminar is that we have a lot of fun. That's for me the most important thing, and that people can really learn a lot through having fun at the seminar. Sometimes when I watch the videos and when I see myself showing the people some move that they did and everything, it's like, okay, I don't want to see that videos anymore ever in my life, because people like to put bloopers quite a lot. I don't know, for me, sometimes even when you wake up early in the morning and you are tired, but when you are there and you start to build the course and people are there and get ready, everything just change. And that's like, okay, now I'm enjoying from the first until the last minute. So I think I'm quite positive when I'm teaching. I'm quite honest to the people. Sometimes because you speak English, which is not my first language, sometimes you can choose the words which maybe sounds harsh to the people, even if you don't mean it that way. Mm. But I will never fake. I will never say to the people, that was amazing, that was awesome, or things like that, if I really don't think you did things like that. Because that's how I can just send you the course and we can just do some online seminars and say, wow, that was amazing, blah, blah, blah. So if I see that you can improve in little tiny step, then I will say, okay, it was good, but let's try again. Let's make it a little bit better. So definitely to be honest to the people in the way that you will not make them feeling bad or something, and that you can show them that they can improve and that they will leave the seminar like, okay, I was able to do it, I improved, I learned something, and they just to go home happy.
Okay, so how do you analyze a dog and handler at a seminar, seeing them for the first time?
So always when I start with the seminars, I build up the course, I put the numbers, and then people are walking the course. And always when they go for a first go, I just let people to run. I always say, okay, now go through the course like you are competing. If this is a competition, just handle like you would do it at the competition. And then depends how many people is in the group. Everybody is running for the first time. And then we go together through the course. And then we are talking about why you decided to go here to the left, right, why you chose a rep or slice, because I just want to first know the people, especially if I see them for the first time, how they are thinking about the dog's lines, the fastest lines. Do they think about themselves, what is easier for them, how to handle, or they are thinking about the dogs, what is easier for the dog, and how they are thinking. If they are thinking, I'm running the course to be clear, or they are going to attack the course and they will risk some parts and do the fastest line, even if it's more challenging and more tricky. And that's how I know people better. And then I know what things we need to do. And then I will see some people, okay, these dogs are missing a lot of skills. This handler is fast enough. This handler is slower and the dog is too fast. And then we will just develop the handling and everything to the team, to the handler and to the dog. So I always have individual approach to each team, and then you try to take the best out of them. Doesn't matter for me. Running in agility is really important. I do a lot of blind crosses. I will all the time try to be in front of my dogs. Now when I have Smoke and Hush, who are my fastest dogs that I had in my life, I'm getting a little bit older, have problems with the knees. Definitely I'm training a lot of rear crosses. Mm. But definitely what I think I specialize a lot is blind crosses, because doing a front crosses, it's a lot of pressure on my knees, so I can't do them a lot. And that's the same thing how I look to other people. Maybe somebody is fast enough, but he doesn't dare to do the blind cross, then I will definitely push you to try. But if I really see that you are not able to do it, I will not force you 20 times. I just don't like when people immediately say, I can't do it. Let's just first try. Yes. And then if I really see that you are miles away and then you are really slow or not able to do it, or it's too hard for the dogs, then we will change. But I will never force from the beginning until the end my way of handling. You need to do it like that. That's why I also don't like to go through the course and give advices to the people. Because I think people will never understand the things and they will never use their head and their brain to understand some things. That's how I learned in agility. I am one of the first that started to do agility in Croatia. We didn't have, it was like maybe five of us. We didn't have any trainer. And all the things that we learned, it was by ourselves. So until now, I didn't go to any seminars in my life. I will do it now in November. And I'm really proud of myself that I will go for my first seminar ever in my life.
After 30 years, fine.
Yes.
So you never went to some other trainers to let your skills check, no?
No, because somehow I was traveling so much, because my last 10 years, it was just like coming home, wash your laundry, pack new things, sit in the car, sit on the plane and go. And then I also didn't compete for so many years regularly, because it was only teaching. And one positive thing during COVID is that I realized how good it is to be at home, to see your friends, to see your family, to train more with your dogs, to improve more things. And definitely I decided when COVID will go away, that also when I will be able to travel more, that I will definitely travel less, because I want to have more time with my dogs and the friends and the family and train more, and definitely to compete more. Because most of the time before, I was competing only tryouts to qualify for the World Championship and European Open, and then that two big events. And that's definitely not enough for you and for the dogs to get a lot of experience to have some really good and successful results on the big competitions.
Yeah, there are also some good parts of COVID, not only bad ones.
Yeah, that's what I said. That was a good part. Yeah. Less income, less traveling, but definitely a lot of things to think about and to understand what you really want in your life and what you really want to achieve with agility.
Sure. I read some nice sentence written from you there. You wrote, you find holding seminars useful not only for others, but also for yourself. Can you tell us more about this?
But that definitely, as a trainer, when you go for seminars and you see different type of dogs and different type of people, you learn so many things. How to work with when people want to run the whole course, is really difficult courses when the dog is missing motivation, the speed and everything. Definitely knowing that type of dogs, you start to think about how you will improve their training, how you will improve that speed. If you have dogs who are going over the top, dropping a lot of bars, being hysterical and everything, just, and then seeing the people doing, for example, I always say my verbal cues are really, really, really strong, and they are stronger than my body language. So when I'm handling, I will always try to focus on my body language as well to be 100%, but that never works. And since my dogs are well trained on the verbals, if my foot is not standing in the perfect position, my dogs will still most of the time do things correct. But when you go for seminars and the verbal commands are not that strong and dogs are really depending about the body language, and when you analyze the handler and you see when he is standing wrong, that gives me, he didn't turn his foot on this way, he didn't use his arm enough, or the people are using their arms too much and things like that. So definitely through all the mistakes or the good things people are doing, definitely I am learning so many things about myself, about my handling, and also about how to teach different type of dogs, how to train them differently. So definitely we all have a lot of good things coming as a trainers when you teach other people.
Was there also one seminar you say like, oh, that's interesting, maybe I want to train also in this way because you never saw it before?
You mean when I was teaching?
Yeah, and then you saw maybe a dog or a dog handler where you thought like, okay, that's really nice technique thing you want to try?
But nowadays we know so many things about agility that when you come somewhere that however people will handle, that will not discover or open your eyes. It's just for me that some people are using more arms than I'm using, or they are using opposite arm and I'm using always the arm which is closer to the dog and things like that. And then I'm thinking about those things. Maybe that will help to my dogs and to me. But if I see that my dogs are reacting good on my way of handling, I will not change anything. And it's the same thing if you come to train with me and you will use the opposite arm, or you will handle totally different than I am. If I see the dog is understanding everything and you are working good as a team, I will not try to change anything. But if I see that you are making things maybe too complicated, or opposite arm, let's say, is putting too much pressure on the dog and he's losing too much speed and things like that, then I will say, okay, let's try some different way of handling, and then we will see if the dog will react better or worse. And that's how we will discover. Like for the blind crosses, like I mentioned before, I started to do and think really a lot about them, because I couldn't do front crosses anymore. It was just too hard for my knees. And that's also, I think, how you improve a lot when you think about those things by yourself. Not, okay, I came for somebody's else seminar. Okay, do blind like this, blah, 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 blah. But you don't go in so many details to understand all the things, what is really, really necessary. Now we will see when I will go for my first seminar in November. Maybe I will get some new ideas which will maybe help with my handling or training my dogs, that we will be maybe more successful.
You are open for new ideas.
Yeah, definitely. And I like to, when I come for seminars, I really like people who like to go in a discussion and ask a lot of details. Because I think none of us that are teaching that are perfectly clear to explain every detail, that people say, oh, I go home, I understand totally everything. Because people get so many new information about training and everything. So I really like when people say, okay, why you would do this? Why you would do that? And just to go in some really nice discussion with the people, then you really, okay, this person is using his brain. Mm-hmm. He really thinks why this and that. So for me, it's also really, when you ask people, do you have any questions? No. Then you always ask yourself, maybe you were not interesting enough. Maybe, you know, people are not that much into that. But when people ask questions, that somehow brings you even more joy during the teaching. But I'm definitely open for all new ideas, and I will try them definitely. And then I will see if it will work or not.
Nice. Let's go a little further back in the story. How was the feeling to compete with your mixed breed, get good results, but cannot win to European championships?
Oh, that was when I was asked, or was, I don't know, when between if I was 12 and, I don't know, 20. So when you are that young, I think you are not thinking about that. Or as a kid, you are always happy, of course, when you are winning. And yeah, it was really hard because he was a really good dog, really smart dog. Perfect, I think, for a kid when I was. And yeah, it was definitely hard when other people from Croatia would go to European Open and I was not able to go because he was a mixed breed. And that's also the reason why I get my first Malinois, just to be able to start too. So it was 2012 when I started. So I missed 2012, 2013, and I think 2014, I was already competing with my Malinois on the European Open in Torino in Italy.
Crazy, yeah. So it went quite fast then.
Yeah. But we traveled quite a lot to Austria and everything. So still, then you were competing on bigger events, nothing comparing like today. When you go to competition, when people want to enter and they take, for example, 800 dogs, and in 2 hours, it's already 1,200 dogs. Yes. Entered. Nothing like that. But for that period, it was really, really nice. Gives you a lot of confidence, and yeah, it was really interesting. But then I was really, really young, so yeah, like I said, it just brought me a lot of happiness. And you go home, you won some poker or something, and yeah. So it was quite motivated, and especially
it was like over the moon feeling already.
Yeah.
How did you? So Asa was your first dog, right?
Yeah, my first agility dog.
Yes. How did you get him?
So during the war in Croatia, 1991, we moved from the city where I was born in east part of Croatia to Zagreb. And I always had dogs in my grandparents' place on the countryside because we live in a small city in apartment. So I didn't have dog in apartment, but I was always obsessed with the dogs, and I always wanted to be a vet. And I was always go to my grandparents to take care about the pigs and chickens and everything. And then we came to Zagreb. My aunt, she found some small puppy on the street in the snow. I think he was like 2 months or something like that. And then we lived in the house. And then my parents just said, okay, you can have the dog. And then we moved to a flat and they said, okay, now you need to give the dog away. Because we came from a small city where it was not common to have a dog in an apartment. And I remember, I think I was like 13 or 14 and I cried so much. No, I don't want to give the dog away. And then said, okay, we will take him to apartment. And then I saw on television some commercial for agility. I went there and I think it was some kind of a competition. I think it was like for 1 week. And then it was in the end some small competition. Who win that competition, then you can stay in the club and train agility. And then I won that competition. And then that's how I started.
Crazy. Yeah. So you saw some advertisement and then you just...
Yeah. And I always wanted to do something with a dog. And that was like, wow, so interesting. Like a lot of... running, playing, and I tried. I really like it, and yeah, now I'm still in it.
Yeah, quite a long time, but yeah, that means that you like it much.
Yeah.
Okay, so wow, we heard a lot of your lifestyle and all of your agility hobby. We have always in the ad some short questions, some short answers, so don't think about it, just give them answer, yeah?
Oh my
you ready?
God, okay.
Agility is for me
the things that really makes me happy and full.
Favorite obstacle in agility?
I don't have any favorite obstacle. I really like to train all of them. There is no favorite.
My dogs are for me
the best thing in the world.
The most important sentence I have ever heard in training.
Phew. I would say, but that's the sentence that I said. No risk, no win.
Agility in my country will increase in the next 5 years.
I really hope so.
What I would like to say to the agility community.
People, enjoy what you are doing. Don't overtrain your dogs. Don't start too early. Have fun, and results are important, but not the most important thing in agility, like in any kind of sport.
Nice answers. So thank you so much for giving us an insight of your agility lifestyle and giving us, of course, your time.
Thank you very much. It was really a pleasure to meet you and to talk to you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. And hope we will meet in person one day.
Hope so too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.